It's going to be a special episode tonight. Special episode tonight. Everybody excited today? There he is. We have great excitement for the episode. I'm sorry. Yeah, great class tonight. Great class. But we definitely want to have you excited. Yes. Well, we're going to make you some. These are some of the greatest chapters in the book. That is. There we go. All right. Coming. There we go. All right. I messed all that up. Don't do that anymore.
Okay. Now that I know.
Yes. Yes. So you know how to cut off my mic. All right. We're going to have a good time. These are the greatest chapters, some of the greatest chapters in the book, and I am excited about it. Therefore, I want to do something a bit different. I am going to make this available to the public, this one. Therefore, what have we learned thus far about integrity? And how have we learned? Let's just do that for a quick. What have we learned about integrity? Because right now we're talking income. We're not necessarily, but integrity leads to income. Everybody got me? Now that we have a clear understanding of this, tell me what you learned thus far from now until past.
I'll speak, I guess.
Go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me? I learned integrity is a work in progress. It is a consistent gut check. And what it deals with income is income or money tends to expound on what you already are. So magnifies what you already are. So your integrity has to match the if your income or your wealth is going to sustain it, your integrity has to match it or exceed it.
That's absolutely fair. I'm not going to make any corrections to that. That is a good job there. And I don't want you to just think about this in income, but I like what he did. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question after Grace talks. Go ahead, Grace.
I learned what I did learn with integrity. Tim just touched on it a lot, and I think you also, Antonio, and probably Shannon, if you're not getting hit in this book, if you're not seeing yourself in the book with the different people that are being talked about with their integrity needing to be checked, then you're not actually reading and taking in what the book is supposed to be doing to you, which is really convicting you to check your integrity. And in order to receive the income that you desire, you have to check it, make it better so that you can grow out to the money instead of the money dwindling down for you.
That is good. That is correct. Someone give me examples inside this book to where people actually lost their income
due to integrity.
The CEO.
Okay,
of the company invalidating everyone's concerns. He was out within a year. The CEO was, I'm getting two people mixed up. The CEO was thinking that he did a great job and answering all their questions and saying, oh, you don't have to worry about that. Oh, I got that all under control. But he never really took the time, the book says, to wrap his arms around their experience. And so he was out within a year.
Okay, we're going to come back to wrap his arms around their experience, but let's go. Who else can point out an instance when someone lost income because of integrity, even if you point out again the same example and have a different viewpoint?
The CEO at the beginning of the book, when he could not see the financial issues that their top seller was causing, it ended up breaking down to him spending more money and losing more money, wasting the time that he had to put in to correct that person's faults than him keeping it.
Absolutely. One of my favorite parts of this book, I think it's in the book. If not, it's just the way I interpreted it. He says he costs too much. Is mm-hmm. that is that word for word in the book, or is that the way I either wrote it down?
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
He costs too much. It's the guy who wrote it. Yes.
The author of the book was asking the CEO, okay, well, you're telling me that he does all of these great things for your company. He's bringing in money. But have you thought about how much he's costing you? There are two or three people that are threatening to leave that have been here.
There you go.
Yeah,
it's page 15.
Page 15. Okay, let's go to page 15 and read that, because that is profound. We're not going backwards, but this is profound, and I want to do this. I want to catch everybody up and put it back fresh on your mind, because these next chapters are, whew, they something serious. And we are reading Integrity by Henry Cloud, Dr. Henry Cloud. You got it? Okay, go ahead. You unmute your mic and go ahead.
So if you begin at the bottom of page,
you got me, show my, you know, now you're speaking to me.
If you start at the bottom of page 14, it says, so you think his numbers are what the revenue show. That is how you come up with thinking he's a good deal, I asked. By the sales figures? Well, yes, that's his job, to make the revenue side work. But what about the expense side? That's not his job. Our CFO, controller, project managers, and others watch the expenses. I didn't mean watching the expenses, I said. I meant the expense side of having him here.
Mm. Yeah, one more sentence.
You mean his compensation? He's compensated well, but he is more than working. He brings in a lot more than his compensation package, the CEO explained. Probably thinking that I was just not getting it, that the guy's sales numbers were much more than enough to pay for him. No, that's not what I meant by expense. What I meant were the other expenses that he creates. And then he starts with them.
Okay. And this is my
listed a bunch of expenses. Listed a bunch of expenses for the readers. And what he was trying to show was, oh yeah, no, I know he makes his salary. That's clear, but he's costing you three other people's salaries. And ladies and gentlemen, some of you right now, you're building businesses.
No, yeah, I'm fine.
You're building businesses, and you are in the area of life to where people are costing you far more money than they are worth. That's integrity. Now, of course, we all know something very simple. We love to be the good guy in a story, don't we? Everybody read this story, and you read it as the third person narrator. You read it as the guy with the solution. Do yourself a favor. Read this story as you're the problem, costing people too much money. Do yourself that favor. Any feedback on that?
I think I'll try it.
Sure, go ahead.
You said if you we're the guy who's costing the company money. That's interesting, because I would also like to point out it's also your supervisor's job to also inform you and develop you into the role a company wants, because not all companies are the same. I'm sorry, King. Oh, I didn't know if you were talking. But yeah, I think I've been in that kind of position, and it's very uncomfortable, especially when you find out at the end of the day, they're going to let you go. It is the CEO's fault, because he helped to develop his employee to let him know where he stands. I'm sorry.
No, that was good feedback. That was real good feedback. Good. So are we tracking that costing money comes from integrity? I really can't think of any other way that you can lose money. I can't. It's not that I want to make this about money. I just know the next chapters And I'm fully aware that if you don't catch this right now, you're going to be lost. You're going to be lost blaming other people for things that are your fault. You're going to be offended all the time. You're going to be constantly hurt and never constantly in prosperity. Okay. All right. What chapter are we on? Is it 789? Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to let Tempest start off with a quote from chapter 7. Something profound. Give her some time to flip.
I won't start out with a quote, but I'll just start out with a story that opens up the chapter. If you read, it's the story about the CEO of the dog food company. it's funny, but it's real life because we do this all the time. So the sales hit hard. Nobody was really buying the food. And instead of figuring out what's wrong with the food, he hired people to advertise. And then next quarter, sales were the same. So what does he do? Instead of fixing the food, he gets rid of people, fires the entire marketing department, and replaces them. And new team come in, they're working, they're doing their thing. And guess what happened again? The sales did nothing. And he has a meeting. He's like, you know, going off. That's what I took it as. What's the problem? And finally somebody says, the dogs don't like the food. And how stupid could he have felt if he had just had the integrity and the character to look for the problem instead of trying to put Band-Aids on places? It wasn't the advertising. Look how much money he costed his own company by hiring a new advertising team. Look how much money he costed his company by firing a marketing department, rehiring new people, and making them work. Had he only figured out that it wasn't the advertising, that it was actually the product, how much money could he have saved and how much money could he have made in the quarters that he was losing money? And maybe that doesn't seem like it fits. You're not selling dog food. But how many times have you had problems and you went around the problem trying to fix the problem? How many times have you had a problem and instead of sitting back saying, what did I do to cause it, you blamed everybody but you? Had this CEO had the integrity of a CEO, had this CEO had the integrity of somebody who wanted their company to be the best, they would have looked at everything across the board. As as business owners or as people who work for companies, you're going to hit this all the time. Me and Antonio go through this all the time. But imagine if he had just stepped back the first time around and looked at everything as a whole, where would his company be right now? And imagine if you would step back and look at your life as a whole, where would you be right now? Would you be constantly blaming other people for your poor character? Or would you check your integrity and check your weight and figure out what are you doing to cause the problems in your life? Band-Aids don't fix problems. They hide scars. And you can only hide scars for so long because Band-Aids aren't meant to last forever. When water hits a Band-Aid, the Band-Aid falls off. And you're in a wake. You leave in a wake full of Band-Aids thinking, I'm going to cover up my integrity, but we still see you. We still feel the violence of your weight, even though you're pretending. You can't. The water doesn't pretend. It is what it is. The ground doesn't pretend. We talk about planting better. You can't plant. I want my company to grow. No, you can't expect a harvest of, I want my company to grow, but planting seeds of, let me fire everybody but me. How many CEOs do you know that have been fired by their board because they failed to do something? He should have been out of there quarter one. You know what I mean? Yeah. He should have been out of there quarter two. An employee should not have had to tell him it's a dog food. But if you're in an environment and you don't allow people to talk to you, of course you can't hear nothing. Of course you're always right. So be mindful of that. That's a hard pill to swallow. Maybe you're not a business owner, but maybe that's you in your marriage. Maybe that's you in your relationship with your kids or your relationship with your parents. Or maybe the universe is trying to teach you a lesson and you blaming the universe instead of you. Any thoughts? Questions? Concerns?
I need everybody to respond, to have something on what she said. All right, so I'll do this here. Will, I'm going to have you go first. What you got? There's so much there. Got to unmute your mic. You know where's that? Yes, you, Will. Yes, yes, sir, you. No, ain't no other Will over here. All right, he's looking around.
There you go. Hello?
We got you.
Y'all want me to just get feedback on that? You're absolutely correct, Ms. Stanley. You don't look at yourself as the problem, you will never find a problem. And, you know, you got to start with yourself before you look anywhere else, because if it's your company, if it's your project that you're on, you know, that's your life. That's your baby that you're taking care of. And nobody can take care of it like you can. So if that has a problem, if your child is sick, if your child have a problem, hey, it's not on nobody else. Even if it is on somebody else, it's still on you. So that's all I have.
That was good. He looking around like he ain't had no value to add. That was good. That was real good. Michelle, you're next. Even if you have a loud background, I'm calling you all out. Not in a bad way, but she said too much. Go ahead, Michelle. We're ready for you.
Okay. That's actually one of my favorite, actually, analogies or stories in the book, because it's so simple, and we complicate everything. We tend to always complicate it by bringing other people in that don't even belong. If we would just look at ourselves, it starts with ourselves. Why not look at ourselves first? I loved how Tempest said with the Band-Aid, you're just covering everything up. You're just covering the scars up. I love that, Tempest. And you go, Will. Thank
you. Yes, yes. Who is next? Ashley, you're next. Mm-hmm. It's the layout on my screen. I'm just going from right or left to right.
Actually, I can relate to the story because I work for somebody that actually did the same thing. I was the person that had to like fire people and hire them. And it got to the point where I had to realize, I'm like, it's not the employees, it's the person that's running the company. And so when I started to tell him certain stuff that I started to notice that he was doing and causing this situation to happen, it started to cause issues. So I said, let me just try and remove myself. And I just started praying on it to remove myself from the situation because it was just a lot of stuff. And I was like, when I read the story, and I even listened to it today, like I read it and listened because I was like, I need to get this in my spirit. But it's just, this book is like almost all my jobs I worked at, almost all of them. And it's just like, dang, it's like a slap in the face for me. But it's good. Like, it's a good, like, for me, I call it, like, what how you say it? It's like pain but it's pain. You're getting closer to the healing, like completely being healed.
Yeah, that's good. Keep going.
That's it. That's it. I mean, that's it.
So I like to, she said live, I like to highlight, the pain that gets closest to the healing, that makes you, or symbolizes you're closer to your healing. Earlier, I told you all that in this company that we are a part of, we have an aggressive, it's not aggressive, to me it's very realistic, it's just so realistic for me. My belief is sky high, I suppose, but it ain't that hard. We have a goal of getting $100,000 a day. Consistently. Forever. At the minimum. And once we set this goal, we had some dry spells in sales. And I told my team, I confided in my team. I was like, you know what? I had to remind myself last night. It's supposed to happen that way. It's the law of opposites. It means the pain that we're having, as he's saying, we're so close to getting it that we got to go through the opposite of it so we can experience what we truly desire. And that's just the way it is. I just want to highlight what the end of what Ashley said. It's very true. Besides the fact that she knows someone that is the problem, but she has to do the hiring, firing. Besides the fact that she has to not hire the best people, but the weakest people to work with this person. Besides that fact, because all that was powerful. It's the pain that she recognizes that happens right before the breakthrough. Okay, good job, Ashley. Grace YW Sandals, the third. You are next.
It just felt like it was right.
You lost train of thought. We're talking about the CEO of the dog food, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not that you're the third, because you're not.
When I was reading and the book kept asking, why did he keep overlooking the dog food? Why did he never think about the product instead of the people? And when Tempest was talking, I said, okay, that does make sense. His integrity wouldn't allow him to look at the product or actually look at himself. And then when Will said, this is his baby, that made more sense. It's more left brainness.
Yeah.
If your baby is an infant or if your baby is a toddler, a teenager, or grown, whatever happens to that child, I tell my students all the time, you are not just a representation of you. You are a representation of your parents. So what Will was saying was the truth. It is on you. Because when people see your child, they think of you. When I was in my school district, every time I told people my last name, they immediately thought of my mom. And every time they said, oh, that's your mom. Oh, we love her. She has a great spirit and she's so good with kids. And so I knew I couldn't mess that up because mom did a good job with her baby. So it all boils down to it does. Your integrity, check your wake. Mm.
Yeah. Deanna Mitchell, it's on you.
In reading this, I had the same question, like, if he keeps getting the same results doing the same thing, it has to be the food. And then when Tempest started talking about you keep putting Band-Aids over things, I was sitting there, I'm like, how many band-aids do you have on yourself? Like, how... My entire life, I was this guy. I looked at everything else around me to see what was wrong and tried to fix everything else around me and never looked at myself. So looking at myself, you have to start peeling off the band-aids. And in peeling off the band-aids, you realize there's a scar there. And because you had that band-aid there for so long, it hadn't quite healed. So as Ashley was saying, it hurts. But the more and more Tempest was talking, I was just sitting here, I'm like, huh. How many band-aids do you have and how many have come off in your wake with other people? How many, it just had me thinking. It just really had me thinking, like, how many people have you let go of because you didn't see you in a situation but blame them?
Yep. Jim, on you, brother.
You know, especially when Tempest was talking about this, it made me think of a quote of a movie. Can't remember if it was a classic or a kid and play. He said, "You better deal with this problem before the problem deals with you." Is when the kid's roommate was talking to him, and I was thinking about what Tempest was saying. The guy never dealt with his problem, and he was so arrogant to not even consider that the dog food was disgusting to dogs. He never did a study. He never did a panel. He never did anything that could have been helpful. He didn't even look at, I think he also was a little bit of laziness on his part, which deals with his integrity. Because had he done studies, had he done samples, had he put in items like critiques that any of the dog owners would think, or why this wouldn't happen. He was consistently thinking this dog food is the best, I'm going to sell it. And if people aren't buying it, then there's a problem with the people who's working with me. He never thought about the product, if the product was the best that it could be. He never thought to improve it. So I think we always have to have a healthy understanding when we're dealing with integrity of what if this really isn't the best like I think it is. And it's a gut check again. I'm done.
All facts there. He ain't do no research. He ain't do no polling. He ain't asked the owners. Hey, will you go home? Does your dog eat this food? He fired folk because he was too good to look at himself. Epodi Bashangi, you
up? Hi. So this kind of reminds me of a situation that I'm in, where I'm working with someone that is, I'm working for someone, and I'm looking at them, and I'm like, this person is not receiving any new information. Like, they're getting upset with everyone everyone in the organization, and like, just, and like, of course, because life is a mirror, and like, the thought that, okay, fine, I'll look at myself, and that, okay, I'm just like that, you know, and I don't have integrity, like, yes, it makes me mad because I'm like, okay, but it's not gonna happen overnight. And so, like, I go into the cycle of back and forth of, okay, I look at myself, get angry, so then I throw it back to someone else and be like, okay, well, you know, look at her, you know, what she's doing. Because it's so hard to just like sit in it myself. And see how it's affecting myself and my parenting and my business and my relationship and all of that. And like, I don't know, I'm still at a place where I don't like this book. And I don't, it even makes me, like, I have empathy for him. Because I'm like, it's not easy. Like, it's not easy to just, like, all of a sudden have integrity. You realize, or, like, just, like, see something that you just don't see, or know something that you just don't know, just the way that you've always been. So I'm like, I kind of even get a little upset because I know myself. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't have integrity, but I'm like, there's a lot of things that I'm going to screw up before I ever get to the point where I'm like, okay, I have reached, my integrity is going to reach out to the income that I want. And even that makes me angry because I'm like, yeah, it's just, you know what I mean?
No, that's solid feedback. Nothing wrong with a single thing you said, obviously. I want to pose a question to all of you that's inspired by her question. Then I'll pause for dramatic effect, and then I'll turn it over to Tempest as she led this here. She said it's not easy to all of a sudden have integrity. I want to pose this thought to you, or pose this question. Was it easy to all of a sudden not have integrity? For whatever reason, you all believe you came out the womb the way you are. Oh, hear me well. That devious, mean person, backstabber, let me get you before you get me. That's not how you were when you were two. You shared as a kid. Now you protect as an adult. Took you nearly 2 decades to develop all your non-integrity. By you, I mean second person plural, everybody. So it's not only not easy to just cut it on or develop it. It was also not easy to develop no integrity. You just chose to. None of you are off the hook. You weren't born this way. You weren't born upset. You just been upset for so long, you don't know any other way. Tempest?
You always get LeBron James and be like, others? Don't help me. Others are the rest of the cast, if you don't know. They don't do much. I want to go back to something I think a few of you brought up, arrogance. Where is this being posted at before I say what I'm gonna say? After this recording, where are you supposed to?
No name.
The first year, this is my fourth time?
Yeah,
is this my fourth year in the class?
Yeah, it's your fourth year.
Oh my God. I'm graduating this semester. My first year reading this book, I was arrogant. I would sit in class and be like, yep, that part about her over there. That part, oh, you don't listen? That part right there about other people in the class with me. CEOs don't listen? Oh, that shows you. Salesperson at the top of their game? Oh, that's you right there. I never looked at me. I was always the narrator that Tony was talking about, looking down on everybody else. Because I knew the tools and the principles in this book didn't apply to me because I had my integrity together. And guess what? I didn't. I was arrogant enough to think that I was sitting in a leadership class being the perfect leader, more perfect than the leader leading the class. I was better than everybody because I was above everybody, looking down at everybody, pointing out their flaws in this book, and never pointing out mine. I was the writer. I was Henry Cloud. not the characters in the story. Second, I read it, I heard finally about the wake. And I said, wait a minute, maybe my wake ain't too good. But I didn't ask 5 people, that was too much. I asked 2. One person told me too much, one person was kind. And I said, the person who told me too much, they wrong, they need to check their integrity. So you can't possibly tell me about me. So let me side with the person who made me feel good, and I'll operate out of feeling good. And later that year, what the other person said, the person who said too much, kept ringing in my ear, kept waking me up in the middle of the night. And it made me feel uneasy because either I should have brought this up last week or whatever, but either I was 2 different people around certain people, or I was so fake I didn't recognize myself. Did you know that fakeness equals arrogance? Too arrogant to look at me, so I looked at the representation I allowed other people to see. But the person who told me the truth saw my ugly side every single day. I didn't want to hear that. Because you're too close to the fire. Let me listen to somebody who sees me on occasion. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we tend to side with that. We tend to side with the people who we see at church who sees a good side of us. Or we tend to side with the people we see at work when we have our fake work voice on.
Hello.
Hello. That's Michelle. So as Antonio was talking, I wrote down 2 things. One, too arrogant to look at myself. Because even today, even year 4, even CEO, even all these things, I still catch myself being too arrogant to look at who Tempest is. And I have to catch myself and I have to check myself every day. Because every day, the arrogant Tempest will wake up and say, I got my stuff together. But she doesn't. So I want to encourage you all, integrity is a practice and it is a process. And just like you learn how not to have good character, you know, you learn how to have bad character, you can learn how to have good character. It took me 30 years to get here. It's not going to change overnight. Mm-hmm. Second thing I wrote down, I don't know if he said or it just popped in my head, but too arrogant to ask questions and to seek help. Mm-hmm. And that's too many of us. Too many of us are suffering, but because we need to look the part, we won't reach out for help. Because we need to look like we got it together, we won't reach out and ask our brother, our sister, hey, can you help me? Or hey, can I talk to you about this situation real quick? We need to be put together. And that does more damage than good. Because now you out here floating like you are holier than thou, but you're treating people like crap. So my original copy of this book, I gave it away, but the cover was torn. LOD, you talk about I hate this book. I tossed this book across the room a couple of times. I had tears in the book. I had Coke spilled on it because I didn't care because my character was terrible. And every time I looked at this book, I saw my character. Not the words, how I treated the actual book represented my character. Because when I'm angry, I toss stuff to the side and I don't care about it. Or I put it on the shelf and I let it collect dust because I got it together. I don't need your help. I don't need your assistance. And I said this somewhere, I don't know where I said it. I don't want that life anymore. I don't want my character to cause me not to do the things that's written on my wall. I don't want to be at the end of my life saying I should have gotten it together at 30, but was too arrogant to get it together at 30. I don't want to miss out on life, miss out on greatness, miss out on abundance. And it's not just about the money, but I do want a certain dollars in the bank. And nothing is wrong with that. I think we shy away from that, but that's a different class. But I don't want to get on my deathbed saying I should have, could have, would have. I want to do it right now. So when I get to the end of my life, I'm at peace with what I did. My boss?
I hated this book too.
What'd you say?
This is why the name of the class is named after this book. I hated this book. This book was the greatest leadership book I have ever read. This book was the greatest book on personal development, on integrity that I've ever read. And I hated it because of all those reasons. Every last one of them. How dare you tell me who I am? F you for calling me out on my bull. But that's how we feel, right? That's how we do it. We'd rather cut down others than inspect ourselves.
Because that's...
No? Please?
Because that's easy. It's easy to point out someone else's flaws than to do the work for ourselves. It's easy to look at you and say, you got an attitude problem, but not see the attitude problem with myself. You do know when you pick out flaws in other people, you're picking out your flaws. You can only recognize who you are in other people.
That's right.
Scientifically, you cannot see something that does not exist in your mind. That is it. Mm-hmm. Unless it exists in you, you can't see it in others. Mm-hmm. So you know all them complaints you got about your spouse?
That's you.
It's on you every time. That's you every time.
That's you.
How he never fix it, how she never fix it, that's you. Don't smell yourself. All right. Let's see. Good feedback, ladies and gentlemen. Let's pick up. Let's get someone else to highlight
someone else.
Something else from chapter 7. We can just read the whole chapter word for word.
That's true.
Should you want to. It's amazing. Yes, we got Deanna in the back.
So on page 102, the last paragraph that starts with, but in the situations, I highlighted, then we have to say that to have character integrity is to tell the truth no matter what, no matter the cost. I highlighted that because I have a tendency to lie to myself. So when I highlighted that, I was like, okay, what is your truth no matter what the cost? You lie to yourself all the time, so now it's time to tell yourself the truth. And what is the truth? Regardless of what the cost may be, you have to stop lying to yourself in order for you to change your character and build your integrity. So that line stood out to me for that reason.
That's worth talking about. The giant who?
Oh, no. Okay.
Who was stung by what she said? Stung.
I don't think that's strong enough.
Who's stabbed a little bit?
Okay,
you know why I asked it that way? You said you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll let her. She's come on, Kobe. Don't get up in here.
It stabbed me. Can I say that? It stabbed me, and it should stab everybody because we all lie to ourselves.
Yes, that's the point. That should stab everybody.
We all lie to ourselves, and if you don't like the word lie, we all pretend. If you don't like the word pretend, we all fake it. If you don't like that, and I don't know what else to say, you deceitful, whatever. You're not who you are. And we lie to ourselves to make ourselves look good. We lie to ourselves to pretend that we have the perfect character. It basically, when we lie to ourselves, it's really us convincing ourselves that we are right and we got good character, and it's always someone else's fault.
Boom. Shaka-laka-laka-laka. It was too easy. It was, come on, it was right there. About another 30 years for me to pull that joke 30. Off. Okay. Got Deanna coming back up to the plate.
To add to what Tempest just said in regards to later on in the book, it talks about your reality. And if you can, if you have the character to handle your reality. And this ties into that as well, because if you're consistently lying to yourself, you're consistently telling yourself one thing when it's actually not that, when your reality is telling you one thing and you're lying to yourself saying, no, that's not it. This is what it really is. When you consistently lie to yourself, you distort your own reality. And when you distort your own reality, what wake are you leaving? Because you're not, like Tempest said earlier, you're fake. So the chapter 7 and 8 just kind of hit me like consistently on a consistent basis. Every line, it was like, oh my goodness. Because I really had to sit and think like, can you handle your reality? And I was like, no, I can't handle my reality because I'm always lying to myself.
I cannot handle my reality because I'm always lying to myself. That she summed up the whole book. That one sentence. No, honestly, Deanna, you summed up the whole book. The reason he brings this up in later on in the book, because the subtitle of the book is The Courage to Meet the Demands of This Reality. You summed up the whole book with that one sentence. Better than I ever could have said it. I'm out of myself, so I can't meet the demands of my reality. How many of you right now, you've convinced yourself you're a nice person?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm
sorry. You know you're not nice.
I am.
And the reason why you are not nice, or how we know you're not nice, we can check your harvest. You have friction in every relationship in your life. And the only relationships you have no friction in are those you get to control and be abusive in. And then there it is. This is how you process your reality. You say, you know what, reality? I'm going to dominate you. Then you try to dominate reality. And reality pops you in the face. So you say, I'm going to just dominate people. Next part of chapter. Anything else profound in chapter 7? Anybody got something else? There's plenty. All right, let's go to chapter 8. I can't wait till we get to chapter 10. I'm just telling y'all right now. It ain't gonna happen today. Yeah, but I'm just telling you. Chapter 10. All right. Let's go to chapter 8. Just to show you all the book that we are reading. Dr. Henry Cloud, Integrity. Great book. I've been reading it for a long time. Do me a favor. Next we have coming up, Deanna, to the microphone. Right before we close, we'd like to give a shout out to our sponsors, McDonald's, Arizona Tea, and Apple iPhone 8. Thank you very much. Next, we have up Deanna Mitchell, and after that, weather and R&B.
That's it.
Yeah. You can't give me a fancy mic.
You're gonna take it away. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so in chapter 8, Seeking Reality on page 112. It says, it's the first paragraph, and it says, think about it. Warren did not assume or think or act as if he knew what reality was. He sought it. He went looking for it, even door to door. But many people, because of pride or narcissism or just bullheadedness, approach a task like that and basically say, get out of my way. I know what I'm doing. They have a know-it-all approach and, as a result, miss what reality truly is. And then the next paragraph says, people who see reality as their friend, however, do not assume that they have a grasp on it. In reading this, I realized that I always go into life telling myself, oh no, this is what it is. So since this is what it is, this is what it is. And I don't see the true reality of things. I'm not a friend to reality. Reality is not my friend. I go around reality as much as possible. Because to face my reality means that what I see in my head is not true. And because I always lie to myself, reality is my truth. So I do this all the time. I always assume or think or act as if I know what it is instead of actually seeking what it truly is. And then when you go further down, it says you really don't know what you don't know. And Tony always tells us that all the time. And he always goes back to, is it Socrates?
Yeah, Socrates.
He always goes back to Socrates, you know, the person who thinks they're the smartest never learns anything, but the person who believes they're the dumbest is always open to learn, because I always believe I'm the smartest, because I always know what I'm doing, because I always believe that what my truth is what my truth is. I'm never open to learn anything else, and that's when the arrogance comes in. And I realize that because I allow reality to come in certain parts of my life, I'm still not whole because I'm still lying to myself in certain areas. I create my own reality in a negative way because I still lie to myself about it. And so then it goes further on to say he went there and first tried to understand the people. I never try to understand anybody because what I tell myself is what it is. So if that's what it is, that's what it is, regardless. I don't allow reality in. I don't allow reality anything. I don't even give reality what's the word I'm looking for? I don't even acknowledge reality because I lie to myself. I don't try to understand anything else around me because what I say goes. You know, I always assume or act. I always assume or think or act as if I know what reality is. I never seek. And so that whole portion right there stood out to me.
She's going to be the all-star for tonight. There is something. Uh-oh. Go ahead, please. Please, come on in, Michelle.
My comment was, I wasn't living my reality. I was living what other people told me to live. I was living somebody else's reality. I didn't even acknowledge the fact that I had my own reality, that I was my own person, that I could do my own thing. So this is kind of freeing to me, knowing that I can create my own reality. I don't have to live what people tell me I am. I don't have to be in situations where I'm limited. I felt like I was in a bubble of somebody else's reality. So this chapter was letting me know that I have my own reality and it's what I choose it to be. And I can choose who I want to be in this chapter. It was kind of freeing for me.
Okay, so you ladies are dominating right now. Got one who avoids reality because, you know, I have to deal with it. The other embraces reality, but the reality other people put on her. Whoa. Who else fits in these categories? What about you, Jim? Which one you fit in, or did you find yourself a third way to fit in?
I think I associated myself better with Deanna's, but I guess I was forced to create my own reality because of too much criticism.
Wow.
So
okay, pause because, right there. Hold on.
Yeah.
Too much criticism. Now, I want to say, well, yeah, but you know, mm-hmm. you could have just responded correctly, and then I would be right. But, and I mean a major but, this man said, you know, I was forcing to relate more to Deanna because too much criticism. Ladies and gentlemen, when you don't love yourself, you go find people who don't love themselves or haven't learned how to love themselves, and you criticize them so you can feel better about yourself. And when they become real close to you, or if they're not your family, you make them your family so you can always be better than them. Whether you marry them or you become good friends or best friends, and if they are your family, it is quite possible that everything Jim said is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Because he was surrounded by people that criticized him into low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can pick back up. I just wanted to highlight that.
And that is true. Part of it I won't go into, but yes.
Trying to go into too many details. I'm going to put this out for the public. Yeah. And right now ain't nobody said, you know what, I killed somebody last night. And they deserve to die. Nobody did that, so that's good. Okay.
But I will say this, though. Here's another aspect of it. When you hate yourself because of the reality that you put yourself in, and then it causes you to distort your reality because you're trying to survive the reality you put yourself in. So it's a quandary.
Yeah, it is. And it's a vicious cycle that I believe Go ahead.
But honesty will help that. Because even dealing with, I guess, there was a recent celebrity that killed herself. If she would have had an honest look at where she was at, she wouldn't have looked at suicide as a way out of her reality.
And that's, I mean, I can see how that's fair. Honesty with a good subconscious, honesty with a healthy frame of reference. That's a better way to say that. And honesty around friends that won't punish you for being honest will keep you away from suicide. You know, people who commit suicide, they feel they have no other recourse. Do you understand how poor the people in your life have to be? And I'm not talking about finances. For you to think they won't understand, I must kill myself. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. I say this with respect. I mean to disrespect anybody. But I want you to think about this for a second. Someone says, well, I was real nice to her, but did you listen to her? Did you know people would rather you listen to them than be nice to them?
Don't they talk about being nice isn't enough in this book?
Being nice isn't enough. It's not. Did you hear me? Did you validate me? Or did you hit me with some scripture that only made you feel better about my situation and not me?
God, that's the worst.
That's it. I mean, honestly, sometimes we listen to each other and then we say something because we feel uncomfortable with the situation. So we say something to fix us. Yeah, we look at you and we're uncomfortable with Jim feeling bad. And you know what? I'm uncomfortable with your situation. I'm uncomfortable with you. I'm just uncomfortable with the situation. So I'm going to say something that's going to make me feel better. about my saying it. In fact, I just evangelized you. Oh, I feel great. I read in a book somewhere, I should say this. Got it. I did my good deed for today. Ladies and gentlemen, stop saying things to make yourself feel better. And the person that you're supposed to be helping feels worse or empty, but you left the conversation feeling great.
Word of prayer.
They talk about that. Dysfunction. Yeah, dysfunction. Yeah. Yeah. Did you know that as much as I love to pray, I can't pray away some mental diseases? Did you know that? Did you know that? Am I walking too hard?
No, you're walking.
The reason I'm saying this, the reason, because it's my job to make you all a millionaire. We're talking about character training. Because in order to get to the finances, you have to get to the psyche first. I'm just saying that when I do things to make me comfortable, when I decide I'm right and you're wrong, the universe says, you know what? Yeah. Yeah, you are right with your broke self. Get these right poverties coming at you. Law of compensation, you only get what you give or put in. Last thing I want to say about this here, let me see. Do I want to say it now? I won't say it now. Next section of chapter 8. Okay. Yes, let us flip and roll and flip. Miss Mary Mac, all dressed in black with silver bangs.
I got one.
All right, she got one. I'm gonna keep going.
Thank you. On page 115, in the third paragraph, it talks about, it says, this seeking for truth tends to be balanced in three directions also. So the first they talk about, they seek it about the external world. They want to know what's true around them in their company, in the market, and in the universe. I just want to get the first one, but I wanted to talk about the second one on page 116. Did you say the second paragraph? Second, they seek this kind of feedback about themselves. They don't only wait for others to give them feedback. They also go after it themselves. They desire it and see it as an opportunity to grow. And it is the story later on, well, after that, those sentences talks about CEOs gathering for a couple of days. And it was a young CEO, the youngest one out of all of them. And everyone was going around telling what they do and everything like that. And so when the young CEO finished, one of the more experienced guys looked up and said, want some feedback? And Dr. Cloud said he said it in a way that left you wondering whether he was going to give some sound advice or whether he was going, you know, kind of drag it. But the gentleman said, I'll never forget the young superstar's immediate response. By all means, give me a gift. He saw the feedback, whatever it was, as a gift because it could give him some reality that he did not know. I remember thinking we will be watching this guy's accomplishments for a long time. This is the good ones want to know the reality of who they are and are in tune with the fact that we do not see ourselves accurately. So anytime when someone, how do you say it, has or cares enough about you to really tell you about yourself, and they're really and truly wanting to help you, you can't look at it as, oh man, he's just trying to criticize me and judge me. And no, actually look at it for what it is and say, okay, really figure out, did he or she say this to help me or to hurt me? And most times when you know who the person really is, if you really truly look at for who they are, 9 times out of 10, they're probably telling you that to help you.
Now, Grace, you just led us. We're going to talk about this for the remainder of the class. I want you to go back and read the gift part and then say what Henry Cloud said, because he said this is a gift. He received that no matter what came out this man's mouth, it is a gift. And then Dr. Henry Cloud said, wow, we're going to just read that whole section.
Hello, I can't hear nobody.
Okay, there I am. Sorry about that.
Okay.
When he finished, one of the more experienced guys looked up and said, "Want some feedback?" He said it in a way that left you wondering whether he was going to give sage advice or rail at the young man for being out to lunch in some way. There was just no way to tell from his poker face, but I will never forget the young superstar's immediate response. "By all means, give me a gift." He saw the feedback, whatever it was, as a gift because it could give him some reality that he did not know. I remember thinking, we will be watching this guy's accomplishments for a long time.
All right, let's get down to it. Should you desire to be wealthy, to be happy, to be free, you must take criticism. I'll say it again. Should you decide that you want to be wealthy, be happy, or free, you must take criticism. If you do not take criticism, you doom yourself to the struggling middle class or poverty lower class. If you do not handle criticism, the divine connections this world has set up for you will find you unworthy, and skip over you. Criticism. Accepting criticism is the one thing. If I can say, what separates the rich from the poor? If I had to think of a million answers and come down to one, it would be accepting criticism. You know why some of you don't try? Because you made up in your mind, if you fail, it won't kill you, but people will criticize you and that will kill you. Did y'all hear what I just said?
Yeah.
You're convinced failing won't kill you. You're convinced. But boy, when they make fun of you for failing, when they tell you I told you so for failing, when they say, oh, Jim, you should have did it this way for failing, that you're not so convinced won't kill you. Okay, there we go. That you're not so convinced won't kill you. You had something back there?
Going back to what Jim was saying about him being criticized, so he had to create his own reality. Growing up, I was criticized, but under your mentorship, I I realize that everything that I have going on right now is my fault. But I can understand how we cringe at criticism, because I cringe at criticism. Because growing up, all my criticism wasn't the type of criticism I would get from someone like you. The criticism growing up was, you need to stop eating that or you're going to get fat. Or it's just things of that nature. The criticism I get from you is, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I say that to say, well, it more so a question, is all criticism a gift?
Hey, the young man had no idea what this older man was going to say. But he said, sure, give me a gift. Mm-hmm. The answer to your question is all criticism is a gift. It is a gift for you to grow in understanding, or a gift to remind you that you have grown in awareness. Mm-hmm. But it is a gift. Nonetheless, it is a gift. Everybody hear me. Please hear me. If you desire to be wealthy, happy, or free, the one thing that is required of you is to be able to accept criticism. Most of you don't try, not because you think dying is going to kill you. You don't try because you think when they criticize you for failing, that will kill you. Now, there's something very important here. The people who will be rich or poor, the one thing that divides them is accepting criticism. It flows to all the six major fears written by Napoleon Hill, one of them actually being fear of criticism. But if you are afraid of criticism, you are also afraid of poverty, because you're embracing poverty. The one thing you need on this earth is to be able to accept criticism. You know how many good people y'all have lost because they have just simply walked to you and said, good job, I was proud of you. Next time, don't be so sad. You did a good job. And you were pissed at them. They didn't even correct you. You know how many of you are missing good girlfriends, and boyfriends, and husbands and wives because you stay with the wrong person because you're afraid to go back out into the dating world because you deep down know that what you are, even you don't like, and you don't want someone to be honest with you, so you stay with the person that's serving you because they're never honest with you because you never talk in the house anyway. The one thing you need is criticism, and the one thing you need to be able to do is accept it. Now, right now, everyone with an anger problem, you don't like anything I've said thus far. And here's the deal. It has nothing to do with your anger. It has everything to do with your low self-esteem. You're angry because you have low self-esteem. You won't admit it, but that's what it is. Everyone who suffers with depression, you agree with everything I said. And I already decided you're the only person on planet Earth that can do nothing about it. if you suffer from anger, you're like, man, this motherfucker needs to shut up with his dumb ass. You understand? If you suffer from depression, if you suffer from depression, you're like, wow, he's so right. Wow, that's so me. Wow. But I can't change. Same issue, two different ends of the spectrum. Two vastly different responses. And now you can't win because you can't listen to opposing viewpoints. Can I give you a scientific fact? Science. I just read it in Science. It's Us magazine. It's not a real magazine. I just read it, okay? Mm-hmm. No one has ever died from opposing viewpoints. Oh. Opposing viewpoints has never caused anyone actual harm. The fear of criticism has. Not the opposing viewpoint. The opposing viewpoint was a word. Your fear of criticism made it an indictment against your character. Go ahead, Michelle. I know you got something to say.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know I had something to say, but I do, because when you're sitting here talking about it, I don't get angry when I get constructive criticism. What is that when I actually like it?
That means you're growing into awareness and you're like the young man in the narrative. You're saying, give me some more of this gift.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I try to receive it all and I try to just take it. I don't get mad 90% of the time. But okay.
Okay, 90. You're doing good. Get that to 100. 90% happy is not enough. You're doing a good job, Michelle, at 90%. Don't let me take that from you. 90% happy is not enough, though. You are creative, super infinite beings that deserve to be 100% of everything. All of you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Michelle. And I want all of you to receive that. I'm not telling you 90% is bad. You're ready to talk to me. So I'm not telling you 90% is bad. I'm telling you 90% is unworthy of you. You've been conditioned and taught by our grade schools 90% is an A. 90% is not an A to an infinite being. What if you served a 90% God? What if you woke up with 90% of your health? What if 90% of your kids woke up this morning? You've had 90% of movement in your left arm. School teaches you be okay with being average. Be okay with being good. Be okay with being almost perfect. But you don't have 90% of your vision. And when you do, you got to put on glasses. You complain about it the whole time. If I gave you 90% of your traffic in your commute, you'd be like, you know what? I'm so grateful. I didn't hit as much traffic.
Yes,
sir. I didn't hit as much traffic.
That's it.
And so, yeah.
Yes.
But why not just give you a helicopter and let you fly over it?
That's what I've been asking you.
Okay. Different perspectives. Tempest, I didn't leave in LeBron James moment.
I have nothing to say. So does anybody have anything to say? If I need to provide comedy while y'all are thinking. I have a fear of criticism. I have a fear of criticism because I don't want people viewing me less than perfect. And I'm scared if I show imperfection, that will shatter the lie I want other people to see about me. Mm. And then you will know that I really am fake. And I really do pretend. And I really do have struggles. And I don't have it together. And at times I do cry. And at times I do get angry. And at times I do go off. But I'm learning that I'm not learning it. I'm learning that when someone criticizes me, I don't have to die there. And my worthiness is not wrapped up in just that. I can take what they say and apply it and grow and move forward. Do I always get it right? Absolutely not. I have a horrible first reaction, horrible second reaction. But when I pause and think about it, their criticism is what I allow their experience to be on the other side of me. And it's not their fault that they are feeling my weight. And they are honest enough or vocal enough to tell me what it feels like. It's my fault for putting them in that situation in the first place. And if I don't take responsibility of that, I'll forever be blocking criticism. I'll forever be blocking blessings. And I don't want the universe to pass me up on abundance because I don't want to be seen as less than perfect. Mm.
This is
not worth it.
Go ahead, MOD.
Well, I think I'm so scared of criticism that I just keep acquaintances and I don't have any friends and I don't get close to people. Because it's almost like I can even tell when someone's about to criticize me, when I get angry, I just realized that I didn't. I guess I'm really scared of that. And I can see how it stems from being insecure in myself and therefore not letting anyone know. I claim to have a lot of friends, but they really are just acquaintances because, again, I don't really let people in because of that.
We claim to have a lot of friends. When taking it out of her and putting it into all of us, we claim to have a lot of friends because that is socially acceptable. And when you're in a social climate, the more friends, the more better you are. Mm-hmm. So we're lying to ourselves, as Deanna said, by saying these people actually respect our character. No, they respect the energy we bring around when we're ready to be around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's only when you're ready to step out do they see you and your energy, but never the real you. It's the energy you have presented for them. You met them one way, so every time you feel like being that way again, you call them up. You got some intellectual friends, you're like, okay, I feel like a stimulated conversation. So then you go to them and you have a stimulated conversation. Got your party friends and you say, you know what, I feel like, you know what, and the truth is, Deanna hit the nail on the head with this one. You're just lying to yourself. They're not your friends, they're your associates. And the reason they're your associates is because you keep them that way. And the reason why you keep them that way is because you know deep down you're not a good person. And the reason why you're not a good person is because you learned to be not one. There is not a baby on planet Earth that is pulling the umbilical cord out of their mother. Stupid mom. I'm not going to like you when I get out. I'm just going to hurt you while I'm in here. Not the way it works. You would think there is a species. In fact, does anybody else have anything else to say? Let me close this out. There is a species. We'll be ending early today. What? There's a species on planet Earth. We call them parasites. They only have life by riding the life force of another creature. You would think that you could compare a baby to a parasite. The baby only has life by riding the life force of its mother. The mother has to eat two meals in one meal. You would think you can classify a baby as a parasite, but you would be wrong. Because it's something about natural law that the moment the baby enters the mother's womb, the mother gives the baby life, and the baby in turn gives the mother future. It is shared love, group economics. One cannot live without the other. The mother falls in love with the child before she ever sees his or her face. She is madly in love with someone she's never met. Motherhood is so strong that before you ever get pregnant, you're in love with your future child. That's not parasitic. We're fundamentally different than parasites and viruses. You would have the Matrix, the people in the Matrix, the movie The Matrix, the government. You have them tell you that, you know what, human beings, they spread and they go and they consume up all the resources and they take from it. And then when there's no more resources, they go to another. That's what they would tell you. But we're not viruses. We're not viruses. We give life to this world, and this world gives life. There we go, we'll come back. We give life to this world. We're not viruses. We give life to this world, and this world gives life to us. And I wanted to stress that last point, same point, two different illustrations, that there's something fundamentally different about you. I'll prove it. I want all of you right now to close your eyes. Of course, some of you are having your eyes open because you're scrolling down your timeline. Because you're human and you can have free choice. The problem is choice. I want you to think about a car. You don't have to be a mechanic. I just want you to close your eyes and think about a car. I want you to understand that you are at the hood of the car. You open up the hood, you put it up on some sort of jack that you barely understand, or maybe you do understand it, and you start taking the pieces apart. And you disassemble the entire car. You take the engine off, the wheels off, you take it all off. You remove the bumper, everything. Take out the back seats, and you label all the pieces. A1 to A26, B1 to B26. You lay them all and you say, this car is clean. And what do? You hire a mechanic or you are one and you put the car back together in the proper assembly, you put the flywheel on to the engine, you do all these great things. Now everybody open your eyes and answer this question for me. Will this car, assuming that this car was working before you disassembled it, will this car work again when you reassemble it? Mm-hmm. That is correct. The answer is yes. But when I take you, when I take your elbow from your arm, your finger from your hand, I take away every moving piece from you and I disassemble you. And I reassemble you again properly. There will be no life. There's something fundamentally different about you. You're not a machine. This is not a machine world. There's something about you so great that I can't take you apart. I can't disassemble you with easy instructions and expect you to be reassembled and have life. You're different. And people with integrity are different among those who are different. People will tell you the difference between rich and poor, 6 inches from left ear to right ear. That might be right, but within those 6 inches will always be integrity. Mm. How do you handle it when someone very close to you intentionally hurts you, abandons you, leaves their friends, takes the kids, or just leaves the kids, and now you're stuck with 2 kids, 3 kids, 4. How do you handle it? I tell you how you handle it. Napoleon Hill says, whatever your auto-suggestion has within it, that's how you handle it. And if there is no integrity in it, you start hurting kids for what someone else has done. Mm. You become a deadbeat dad because you had to perform around the mother who had a high standard. Mm. And the standard wasn't even high. She just wanted you to be a man. But your mother loved you so much, she protected you from being a man. Mm-hmm. Now you want a mother and not a woman. Whatever it may be, I implore you to fully understand that without integrity, you will not make it. Now, there are some outliers here. Outliers, mathematics is everything works in order, but then there's this 2 or 3 anomalies. They're way out there. They're way over there to the left. They're anomalies. They're just, they don't really fit the equation there. They're not predictable there. Where did this come from? But we expected it. Anomalies. That means you haven't, the only way that you would in, you would make it with no integrity, you inherited a lot of money. You became a really good killer. You've been beneficiary of a lot of privilege. Now, it's really hard to inherit a lot of money. Really hard to become a great killer. And really hard to inherit a whole lot of privilege to where even your own privileged people don't like you. Mm-hmm. Therefore, unless you want the outlier astronomical odds
of making it without integrity, the easiest way, the most efficient and numerical and algebraic way possible to be successful is to have integrity. Let me pray for you. We come right now in greatness and humility and love, in peace and in integrity. Those who are watching, may they be convicted beyond all conviction, not to feel bad, but to be good. Oh, there's only one of us in the room, and I don't get to be offensive. I get to be helpful. I get to be friendly. I get to have integrity. And may we all have this, and may we all share it forward. Some would say in Jesus' name, however thou prayest. If you receive it, will you say amen?
Amen.
All right, we are out of here. I appreciate all of you wonderful people. They are waving, and all of you unmute yourselves. We love all of you. Catch us now at 104.7 FM.
Bye. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Which we are with the One Red Shoe Foundation. Ladies and gentlemen, the One Red Shoe Foundation, the most greatest foundation on planet Earth, worldwide. $1 billion nonprofit giving to women. There are no spare women. One Red Shoe.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.